everyone. I'm Arlene Dickinson. Thanks for joining me on my podcast.
It's absolutely critical that we support small business in Canada, and I am proud of my partnership with TELUS, who always puts owners first. This October, TELUS is celebrating Small Business Month by supporting owners with special savings. Get the latest tech to help transform your business with limited time offers. Visit telus.com/smallbusinessmonth to learn more. Let's all support small business and continue to stand with owners.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Reinvention. Today, Arlene chats with TV personality Drew Scott, most famously known for his and twin brother Jonathan's incredibly popular TV series, Property Brothers. Drew speaks on how hard he had to work and how versatile he needed to be in order to reach the fortunate position he now finds himself in. From doing clown gigs as a young child to taking on unpaid work to gain experience he thought was valuable, Drew always knew that reaching a goal is like building a home. You need to start with a solid foundation. While he always dreamt of becoming an actor, he remained grounded and educated himself in various forms. Coincidentally, this pragmatic approach to life led him to creating a skill set which ultimately afforded him the experience and opportunity to reach that goal.
Drew, first of all, really nice to see you. Nice to see you. You were just talking about doing video podcasts, and I said, hey, you know what? I think this would be maybe the first time that I will do the video and audio together, because you convinced me that it's such a good idea to do video. And then you told me that you may not be wearing pants, and I don't know. Now I'm just like,
well, we'll never know. I mean, your listeners can always guess. There. Okay. Anybody watching this instead of listening, now you know if I'm wearing pants or not.
Of course you are. Well, first of all, it's very nice to see you again. Like I was trying to think back to the last time I saw you. I think it was during TIFF.
Yeah, I think it was at the producer's ball a few years ago. And it's just, you know, we're all over the place filming US, and then we come to Canada once a year for filming, and whether it's East Coast or West Coast. So it's almost nice when we have been up in Toronto that we have so many friends and family, and our production company is based out of Toronto. So it's almost like one of those high school reunions where we get to see all of our old gang. So it has been a while. We're due for a catch up.
We are. Well, that's why I'm excited. Well, I found out I was doing a little bit of homework on you because, you know, you want to be prepared. And I found out we have two things in common the good humor that we share in common and the good looks that we share in common.
Obviously,
humility.
You know, and I'm humility. Yeah, that's right. I mean, I don't know what else. I'm older than you, I'm far more successful when it comes to marketing than all of your. I have so much to learn from you.
I could decorate a room and renovate a house better than.
Yeah, there you go. So what else could be similar? Yeah, what are these two things?
Are you ready? We are both the youngest of three children.
Ah, yes, yes.
And we both have Calgary connections.
We do. So I'm the youngest. I'm the baby of the family. But does it count when I'm only 4 minutes younger than the next brother?
Yes, it's still youngest.
The difference between you and your next sibling?
I think 4 years.
All right. 4 minutes, 4 years, same thing. And then
Once you're the baby, you're the baby. When you're the baby, it doesn't matter 4 minutes, 4 years. You're always treated like the baby. And the other ones always accuse you of being unfairly treated well.
See, this is the funny thing, though. Jonathan and I get grouped in because we're twins. We did everything together. So our parents had a hard time trying to like split us in the sense of, you know, who needs more nurturing, who needs more discipline. And in the end, now that we're adults, everybody thinks our older brother, JD, is the baby because he has a baby face. He's got a much younger looking face. He's the Brad Pitt of the family. And then everybody always says they think I'm the oldest because I'm sort of the most sort of, I'm organized, I'm efficient with things, and I'm always looking for that sort of growth of our business and our plans. So,
really? And you know, but I find like, you know, I mean, I know your brother as well, and I love you both to death. I think you're both fantastic. Now that I know about the Calgary connection, you went to the UFC there. So we can talk about that in a minute. But I think that you're the one that makes me feel like you're the most Canadian. Like you're the.
I'll take it. Yeah. I mean, I think maybe what I would see from the meaning of that is like, I love talking with people. I love meeting people. And it's not just, you know, I'm just not going to spark up a conversation because it has to do with some sort of aspect of our business, like networking. I just I love meeting people and hearing their stories. And so it's always funny, you know, Linda and I will end up in a half hour conversation with the busboy at a restaurant that we would be at because there was something really cool, or they were wearing something that we like a pin for a charitable organization or something. And we just love that because everyone has a story. And again, and I mean, that's the basis of our podcast too. It's sort of everything starts at home. Everyone has a story, and it's just, life is fascinating to me.
I'm with you. Like, and I think, and maybe that is what I mean by Canadian. There's an inherent interest in other people's lives, and in a way that is about us all kind of being interconnected and interdependent. And I think that that's really, for me, one of the things, I mean, we'll come to the, you know, to what's happened with the pandemic, but to me, the pandemic has really underlined that about this connectivity we have and crave and need and desire and storytelling and the ability to hear each other's journey makes us feel less alone, makes us feel less afraid, makes us feel like, you know, there's hope, that there's opportunity. And I don't think we do it enough. But your story, honestly, Drew, your story is, I didn't, like, I was reading about it and I'm thinking, I didn't know a quarter of the things that you have done. You have reinvented yourself like 1,000 times.
We try. Does that make us overachievers, or is that, I mean, I just love...
I'm focused.
Or very focused. I mean, and you hear people that do say, you know, taking on too many things is just spreading yourself too thin, but it's not necessarily true if you do it the right way, or if you're, or if it's sort of moving along a path. What goals I set when I was a kid, a lot of those sort of passions and goals have changed. And now I have different goals and passions, but I've still learned a lot, and the path has kind of gone a little to the left and a little right and up and down on the way. But I just love tripping up, learning, changing, you know, where the path is taking me. And I mean, it all really with what we wanted to do right from when I was a little kid, I wanted to perform. Jonathan and me both, we were inseparable as kids, kind of still now, but we loved to perform. And so our parents would always have us putting on little, you know, we would offer to put on little plays when they had friends over for dinner, and we would write little songs and we'd perform songs, and we played the bagpipes, but people wouldn't want us performing with the bagpipes. That was a whole other story. But yeah, so with this energy, that's, originally, we got into real estate coming out of high school because we figured that was a way to make enough money that I could be an actor, Jonathan could be a magician, an illusionist, I could direct my own film and all these other outlets, these creative outlets that we had. And then it just sort of blossomed into what we do now, where it's a blend of both worlds, entertainment and real estate.
When you were doing the, you know, shows for your family, were you also rearranging furniture perhaps?
So it's funny. We were always building. So we grew up on a farm and on a ranch. Yeah. And so we had to be handy. And our dad also had us help him. We built the family house. We built the barns, you know, all this different hands-on work that we had done. And so, you know, in the beginning, we didn't know code or anything like that. We would just slap together a fort, and then that was our fort. And we, you know, we would do a pretty good job of it until it collapsed on us, you know. But then we started.
And then the baby Mike Holmes would come by and fix it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we all hung out in the same crib. Yeah.
Exactly.
But so we learned a little bit. And again, from shows like Mike's shows and stuff like that, like we learn a little bit and we go. But as we started to learn from the ranch, then Jonathan got into building his illusions and props. I got into. I just was fascinated with the aesthetic side of things and design too. And then, so when we started, our parents, still when we were really little, they would go away and we were at the babysitter, they would come home and all the furniture in the house was rearranged because we thought we had a better flow. I guess that was the original feng shui with Jonathan and me.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, it was probably annoying for them, but we thought it was great trying to find a better flow with brown shag carpet and the plaid sofa that we had. But and then it just developed from there. As we started flipping houses back in the mid-90s, you know, we didn't know a ton about renovations, but we knew the basics from what we had done. So we were putting in basic cabinets for the kitchen, you know, laminate countertops and basic, you know, laminate floors, new baseboards and painting. That was it. So we would be flipping houses for 20 to 50 grand here and there. We would live in them, renovate it, and flip it within 2 to 3 months. And we just kept doing that over and over and over again. And as you know, at the time, like back in the day, you could assume somebody else's mortgage without qualifying. Well, here we are at 18. We had no money in our name, and we had no credit, and we had no money. And so we had moved to Calgary, which we heard was the booming market in the U.S. And I went to the University of Calgary right out of high school. And so as these struggling students with no credit and no money, we realized, oh, we can assume a mortgage, take over someone's mortgage. And as long as we made the payments after a year, it takes the previous owner off the hook and we're free to, you know, keep it, sell it, whatever we want. So we just started doing that over and over and over, 20,000 here, 50,000 there. And we eventually got into some bigger properties and paid my way through school. And I didn't finish my degree. I was going to school for kinesiology. I studied the body. I was fascinated by sports and athletics. And I wanted to be a teacher. I wanted to be a phys ed teacher, actually, because I figured it'd be like coaching sports. And then this real estate side really took off. And that's what ended up creating opportunities for Property Brothers.
But all through that whole period of time, so you were doing the house flipping as a means to an end to go to university and then eventually become an actor because that was your passion. But you weren't doing that because you thought that was going to be leading into an acting career in and of itself, right? And if you know, like the reality TV shows you do really kind of came out of this necessity you had.
Well, really, that's it. The whole reason I studied kinesiology is because I'm an analytical brain, and I like to make sure that I have more eggs in my basket than just banking on one thing. And so I was being realistic, and everyone around you tells you too, you know, being an actor, making it as an actor, 1 in a million people make it and whatever else. And my thought, even as a young kid, when I wanted to be, you know, I want to be like Tom Cruise, action superstar. But I always thought, I'm like, it's not 1 in a million that make it. It's that there aren't as many people that are as driven and passionate as me. And I said, I know what I want. I'm going to make it happen. And I would create as much momentum as I could. And as I got into real estate, I wanted to make sure I had a backup just in case it didn't work out. So I was going to get my degree as a teacher. And even with my degree, I did a minor in math because having an activity like for phys ed, but having a minor in math was making me a very rare commodity as a teacher because I have an academic as well as a sport. Right. Then I didn't end up finishing that because the real estate took off, which as I got closer to wanting to be an actor or going back to auditioning, I moved back to Vancouver, which was a busy market at the time, but I started being put out as a host because now I had built up a real estate company over the years. I had knowledge as a real estate agent, and they thought I would be a great host because I had done improv and sketch comedy, and I was good on my feet. And so all of a sudden, I remember thinking in the very early days when they started wanting to pitch me as a host for real estate shows, I'm like, lame. I don't want to do that. I want to be an action superstar. And then the more I thought about it, and then Jonathan and I sat and chatted about it too, and we thought, no, this could be a really good opportunity because building a brand around becoming a go-to person that people look to for how to live their best life in their home or how to improve the value of their home, there's so much opportunity for growth. And so that's when I decided to focus more on that hosting side than the original dream.
You're born in Vancouver. You moved to the homes that your parents are doing it was in Alberta, though, right?
Yeah. So it was just south of Alberta in High River is where they met in Banff way back in late 50s, early 60s. So they've been together 55 years now, and they moved full circle. We moved to the Vancouver area, and that's where we were born, and then. Right, full circle back to the Rockies again, and their love story is amazing to me, and the amount of support that they gave us for what our passions are for all three of us boys, really is it's shaped us to who we are today.
What does your older brother do?
JD is actually a host as well, so he's had shows on. He did HGTV and he had Great American Country. We make fun of him because his show that he had before was going around and testing amusement parks. So it was all American amusement parks, and he would just eat the food, play the games, and test the roller coasters. And then here we are, like we're knee deep in dirty renovation and all the stuff that we do that takes forever, and he's just playing. But
that sounds like a good gig.
And we have him on our shows too, like Brother versus Brother. We have him on too. It's just fun for us to be able to work with family. That's one of the biggest aspects of our job that I love. I get to work with family, and I get to help families.
I think that that's important because the purpose that you have, you know, I talk a lot to people about how you reinvent yourself. And one of the things I talk about is the importance of having a core purpose in your life, because no matter what your career is or what you might be trying to do, because I'm very much like you, I can't try enough things. Like if somebody wants me to go and, you know, do whatever, I'll go, yeah, I'll do anything once, I'll try anything once. if I'm good at it, I'll do it more than that. But if I'm not or don't really love it, I'll just dismiss it. But at least I have that experience of it. And I think that there's something magical about knowing what it is that you get up every day to do. And for you, it sounds like you're driven by helping family, yours and others. You know, for me, I've been driven by first by my family. And then now my, you know, purpose as my kids are older is really all around helping entrepreneurs in Canada. But that guiding light is everything in life, because then that gives you permission to try all these other ways to express that purpose and still enjoy it. And how did you, so I guess coming back to a question on that, how did you hold on to the acting part of it? Because you got engaged in so many other things. I mean, weren't you like, I read you like worked in a bikini. Did you work in a store that sold bikinis or something?
No, that was Jonathan actually did. So it was like a swimsuit and bikini store. And it was just one of the things when we were young, you know, we still had to make a living as we're trying to like move towards our goals. And so this is somebody we had met had a swimwear store. And so Jonathan became their manager because he was smarter when it came to how they could market their brand to compete with the big stores that were already known. But I've done 101 jobs. I mean, if you name something, I probably have some way I've done it, from carpet cleaning to serving to, I don't know, like an air conditioning repair shop, like door-to-door salesman. Like I've done a ton of things that were helping pay the bills a little bit. But while I did some of that, I always stayed focused on the bigger picture of what I wanted to move towards. And again, I think one thing that really helped us, especially when it was coming to me trying to understand production, you know, we now have our production company, Scott Brothers Entertainment. We're the largest producer for HGTV in the U.S. And I think one of the largest for Corus and as well as Discovery in the U.S. And to get there, I mean, I had to make sure that I wasn't too proud to try and learn and understand the ropes. So I remember when I was younger, I wanted to be an actor, but I also wanted to understand production. And so I volunteered to a production office to say, hey, you're shooting these films, you're rolling over from one film to the next every few weeks. I said, I'd love to come in and I will grab sandwiches, I'll answer phone calls, I'll do whatever you do. And this is while I had a successful real estate company. So they're used to having students that come out of film school that would be doing these jobs that pay next to nothing. And I said, I don't care about the pay, you can keep the pay and I'll work five times as hard as any student that you have that comes along. I just want to learn how you do all the things that you do to organize the budget, scheduling, logistics. And I was fortunate, the production manager approved it. And so I came in, I was the second assistant coordinator, literally grabbed sandwiches and answered phone calls. I was there from 6 a.m. until about 8 p.m. every day. And I learned, and after that first show, they brought me back as the coordinator. After that show, the producer brought me back as the PM of the next show because I was very good with numbers and budgets. And after that, I was line producing and working on a couple other films. So within a short period, because I didn't have any ego to say, I'm not going to do that to get ahead, I was able to help forge that path to where I wanted to be.
See, I love that. I love that. There's something about it. It's not work ethic. If you say work ethic nowadays, especially to some generations, if you say, oh, you know, you need work ethic, which generally they translate into working 18-hour days, that's not really what work ethic is. Work ethic is being prepared to do whatever you need to do to learn. Mm-hmm. About whatever it is you're interested in. And if that takes extra hours to do it or doing three jobs or doing, it's not work anymore. It's really just trying to express yourself through life and through what you enjoy and what you want to learn. I don't know why people don't do more of that, because I always said, like, I want to say on my, you know, when I die on my grave, I want them to, you know, say, you know, she didn't waste a minute. Like I don't want to waste a minute.
See, that's one of the things I think that I learned young. There's so many things our parents instilled in us. And then also what I just learned, I was always picking the brain of everybody like yourself, everyone who mentors people out there. I was always looking for somebody to mentor me and to learn off of them in every aspect of what I was trying to do. And the whole idea of wasting time, like when people thought, I don't want to put that kind of effort in, I just want to have it. I'm like, well, you have to understand though, if you want to have it, you have to work hard. Nothing worth having comes easy, or for most people it doesn't. And so I actually had some, I can't remember who it was, if it was my mom or dad, but they had me break down how many hours I watched TV, how many hours I would go and play basketball or whatever else I would do, how many hours I would just lounge around and do nothing. And once I laid out all the hours along with the things that I wanted to achieve, because even as a young kid, we started our first business at 7 years old. We had all these, this drive.
As one does.
Yeah, as one does. And I can tell you that whole story too. It's funny, but the whole thing I realized is, when people say, I don't have time to do whatever it is, I don't have time to do whatever it is, naturally, us as human beings, we fake ourselves out, making us think we don't have time. But the moment there's something that's a passion or something that's exciting, or if there's some girl that you liked and you wanted to go on a date, suddenly you have time to do that, but you didn't have time to do all these other things. So I learned to stop telling myself I don't have time, and that's why we do 45 renovations a year for our shows, 45 hours of programming for HGTV. The next closest host in our genre, I think, does 10, maybe 13 a year. And that's because I stopped telling myself I don't have the time to do things. We know how to efficiently layer our time to move forward.
Yeah. I really believe that that's critical. Do you know Tony LaCavera? Tony, you probably
I know the
have
name.
Met him. He started Global Live, and that which became Wind Mobile in Canada.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's very similar in that he told me that he has figured out how many hours, if he lives like a natural life, you know, like let's call it to 80 or 85 years old, whatever the average lifespan is. He'd figured out how many hours that meant he had in life, how many days that he had, how many like minutes that was. And everything he did, he traded off. Okay, I can't get that minute back. I can't get that hour back. I can't get that day back. Did mm-hmm. I do something with it? And I think that is really the key, because you never know when it's all going to change or end, right?
Of course.
You don't know.
Well, especially if you look in entertainment. I mean, we're now, this is the 11th year we've been doing our shows. Most talent with shows don't last more than a year, maybe two or three. And we're on to our 11th year. And we, you know, we were very fortunate that our audience connects with us and we're the top shows on the network, which thank you to anybody listening who watches our shows. We really love you guys, and it's we do what we do for you. But when we think about that, we always have in the back of our minds, what's our other plan? Because if for some reason tomorrow nobody wants to watch our shows anymore, we don't want to be sort of back to square one. We've always wanted to move forward. And actually, I love, if you haven't read it, it's worth reading the book Essentialism. Greg McKeown is an amazing author and inspiring person. And essentialism is all about the act of doing less to get more out of life. And like you were saying with Tony, was it? The yeah. idea of prioritizing your time, because you only have enough time for so many things. And for me, family is the most important thing. We've really enjoyed doing a lot of programming for our shows to help other families. But my family, I want to have kids. I don't have kids yet. So this is where we're always reassessing and evaluating where we allot our hours, because I want to make sure that I'm young enough to be a dad who can actually get out there and have fun and play with our kids and whatnot.
So you're not, but you're not scheduling sex in order to have.
I mean, ask Linda and she'll make fun of me for that. But I'll put everything in my calendar. Everything.
Oh, geez. So don't let that calendar get ever lost. Maybe actually that could be a show.
Yeah,
I have to pitch. I'll pitch a show to you. Do a show about being a little bit older, you know, maybe not as old as I am, but maybe, and being single and what you need in your home and your life to succeed and to be happy. Because it is a very different thing than mm-hmm. what you need when you're younger and you're just trying to build a home for your family. It's a whole group of people, and particularly women, I'd say, who really kind of reinvent themselves in their entire surroundings and mm-hmm. what they do with their time and how they structure their lives.
Oh, yeah. I think it would be fascinating. And obviously, there are so many people that can relate to that sort of an experience.
So when did you know through all of this years of growing up, starting a business is at seven? I don't know. What business did you start at the age of seven?
Jonathan and I, we were little go-getters. You know, we had traveled to Scotland when we were 5 years old, and our dad was telling us all about, you know, the castles and the knights and the, you know, the battles. And we fell in love with like the idea of having armor and swords and all these antiques. So like as an adult, I have a collection of medieval armor and swords. And on top of that, I have a collection of old coins. I mean, I have coins that go back to 2000 years ago. And it's because I got hooked when I was younger. So after our trip to Scotland, Jonathan and I were like, what can we do? We're going to be going back in a few years. We want to be able to buy some old swords and stuff. And so we started thinking how we can make money to be able to save and then buy these swords. And we thought paper routes, meh, that's everyone does that. And I don't want to get up at 3 a.m. and, you know, whatever else for other little businesses, lemonade stands, no way. So we thought, wait, if we actually saw these decorative hangers at a craft store. And it was just nylon weaved around a hanger. Yeah, the little clothing hangers with a little like rosette around it. They looked pretty. So we like, we can do that. So we started selling those door to door and family friends. We started selling. We had one woman who had a chain of American paraphernalia stores in Japan. She started buying them from us by the thousands. And so here we are at 7 years old. We hired on our older brother. Our mom was helping us. Friends were helping make them. And we're just watching cartoons while we made hangers. And we did quite well until we moved on from there to our next venture as clowns.
And clowns didn't quite...
You know, I'm still a clown. Yeah, it was. It's just the hangers, it was a lot of work to sell these hangers for whatever we were selling them for, $1, $1.75 a hanger. And clowning was fun because we had so much energy and we loved to entertain. And so, at first we worked for Parks and Rec. They put us through a course. And the course was like, a month course or something like that every weekend. And we learned to juggle and do different things. But we were getting paid something, whatever minimum wage was at the time, like $10 an hour. And so here we are around, 8, 9, 10 years old, entertaining at birthday parties, getting $10 an hour. And Jonathan and I, one day, the homeowners, we saw them mention that they were paying $150 for us to be there. And we're like, what? We're making $10 each, and the Parks and Rec is making $150? So at, I think it was 10, we started our own clowning business, and we made up our own little cards, our business cards, and we started marketing it. And we ended up booking all the stuff that used to be at the Leisure Center because we were the favorite clowns at the Parks and Rec. And so here we were at, 10 years old, making $100 an hour or more at doing events, parties, and parades.
That's insane. Slow like, I think about that. And I think, first of all, I really admire your mom and dad because no kids get to do those things unless they are encouraged to do those things. That notion of encouraging creativity.
Yeah.
Playing with your children, learning from your kids, just getting back into play is so important. And for some reason, people think that we get more rigid as we get older and we lose this creative edge. And I think creativity is like literally everything. We can't solve a problem unless we imagine, kind of what that solution could look like before it is, right? And so I love that your parents let you guys do that because it must have been, you're 10 years old and you're going to the park to be clowns. What?
Well, huh? It's funny. You think like a lot of parents, it's overwhelming. I feel for parents, especially with the energy Jonathan and I had. Our older brother was a little quieter, but he was a headache for my parents in a different way than Jonathan and I were because all kids are a headache at times. Let's be honest. I can only hope that I have sweet children that don't have as much energy as I did. No. But what I thought was really great. Yeah. I thought it was great that they harnessed that energy and they found outlets for it that were very positive. And the way they encouraged us too, that they always encouraged us when they had friends over, they didn't want us to be the shy kids in the corner that were afraid to talk when adults were around. So they always encouraged us to be out in front of the adults talking and performing or doing something, which made us more comfortable in our own skin. And even advice too, when we were young, having these businesses we're starting, I can remember my mom saying, there's always a way to the top without stepping on people along the way. And stuff like that, or my dad telling us, everyone out there people will want to tell you no. Nobody's going to work as hard for you to reach your goals as yourself. And so if someone says you can't do something, find 5 ways to do it. And those little bits of information at that time, I didn't think about it. But now as an adult looking back, that shaped who I am and the drive that I had to move forward. And I'm really glad that they took the time to instill that sort of confidence in me.
Drew, when you think about, are your parents in Canada still?
Yep. Yeah, they are. They live in Alberta.
So I'm really curious when you think about, coming as a Canadian, you both live in the US now, you and your brother, and you have your very successful company. While you have production studios up here, you probably identify as much as, an American as you do as a Canadian, just simply because of where you're living. Tell me, I think it would be interesting for people who are listening to us to hear your point of view as a Canadian living in America at a time of global reinvention, at a time of societal reinvention, at a time, we can talk about our lives and that's super interesting, but everything we do is in the context of what's happening in the world. Mm-hmm. So our lives can only be as good as what's going on around us.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Curious, what goes through your head with what's happening down there?
Yeah, it is a scary time in many different ways and for many reasons. And as well, too, we have one of the most important votes coming up for us here in the U.S. in, a matter of a couple of weeks. And so it's, just like what you said, for me, you know, Linda and I have so much that we try to do, my wife Linda and me, as well as Jonathan and us with our companies, there's so much that we try to do to set an example by our actions for what we think, you know, whether it's dealing with human rights issues, whether it's dealing with housing crisis, whether it's dealing with sustainability or environmental efforts that we have. And it's scary when you see the bigger picture of how there's so much miscommunication out there. There's so much hate out there that is causing a lot of problems. And so, I mean, the way that we just look at that too is we've been fortunate to be, you know, we're personalities that people look to for advice when it comes to home and whatnot, but we have this voice that's global, and that just gives us a platform to be able to try to affect positive change. At the end of the day, I just strongly believe, and this is what really drives me, is the bigger our voice gets or our brand gets, it's just the bigger platform I have to speak out about things that I'm passionate about. And everyone having equal rights is such an important thing. Everyone deserves to feel love and be loved. Everyone deserves to have a happy, healthy home. And so, when I see somebody spreading hate about LGBTQ community, it really hurts me. It really hurts me that somebody is not allowed to live their life and be happy. And so, yeah, I mean, I kind of forget your original question, but it just really gets me passionate thinking about what I can do with my voice to make positive change in this world. And the fact that I always try and tell people, you don't have to be rich, you don't have to be a celebrity, you don't have to own some big corporate business to be able to make a difference. If you can affect positive change in one other person's life, that's a world of difference in their life, and you're doing a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, listen, what started it was thinking about what's going on in the world around us. And I believe that when you're reinventing yourself, no matter what it is you're trying to do, that you have to look backwards in order to learn from the past so that you know what you want to move forward with into the future. We don't take everything, you know, we don't always want to drag the past with us. What mm-hmm. we want to do is learn from it and move forward. And I think that there's some important lessons going on right now. And I love your point around, you know, what matters to you and being, you know, equal rights. I human rights are everything. Yeah. I mean, if we all get treated the same, then we get to all have the same opportunity relative to whatever we want and what we choose to do or not do, not yeah. something somebody else is telling us we can't do because of the color of our skin or our religious beliefs or, you know, where we live or our monetary status. Mm-hmm. And you, what I was asking was, you're in California, mm-hmm. Which is sometimes, I think, perceived as being shallow and focused a lot on money and fame. And yet you're holding true to your North Star and your purpose about family and human rights. And I'm curious, how do you do that? How have you managed to hold on to it, Drew?
Yeah, you know what I really find? It's sort of the values that our parents instilled in us. And that, I'll be honest, when I first came down to the U.S. and we were filming down here more, and then we decided to move down here, I had that same fear and that same sort of stereotype that, oh, that LA, it's going to be all superficial. Everyone's walking around with boob jobs and Botox. And then there's all the corporate side of the world there, and they're all just about money and greed. And it's not that same Canadian loving, friendly vibe. But what I find is that energy you put out is what you pull in. My wife and me, and same goes for both my brothers, we have this sort of positive energy. I don't care to just talk, I don't want to compare bank accounts with you or something like that. I want to have real conversations with amazing people. I want to support people and have conversations that are making positive change in the world. And so when we were down here in the U.S., I actually found that all of those similar people that had those same beliefs and those same values, they sort of come out of the woodworks. And so we've really created an amazing community down here of people that are very like-minded. And I love that because it goes to show that anywhere on this planet, it's the same when we travel abroad or we did a Latin American press tour last year. We found a lot of the same sort of people that we met down in Latin America. Same when we were in Asia for our press tour a couple of years ago. So we stick to who we are. And if you don't like who I am, I mean, there are people that don't like our shows or there are people that will say very negative things on social media. Okay, everyone's entitled to their opinion. I know I'm not going to please everybody, but I know deep down that I'm trying to be a good person and I'm trying to be positive and friendly and supportive to other people. I'm not spreading hate. So at the end of the day, if you hate me for some reason, I think that more should be a reflection that you need to look inside yourself to see why that's coming out in you. So,
And so it never bothers you, social media, negative social media?
No, I mean, it's sad when people get really negative for silly reasons, you know. And I'll still get it. You know, I'll you know, I'm able to vote here and I live in the U.S. And then somebody will be like, screw you, you're Canadian, go back to your country. And you don't, you're a TV host. You have no right to speak up about whatever you're speaking up about. So keep your mouth shut and do your show. Yeah. And it's just funny to me that people think that just because we're on TV, we shouldn't have a voice.
An opinion.
And by the way, that's a very small, there's a minute number of people that have those big, loud, negative voices. The majority of our community is very supportive. And you just got to realize, I think with anybody who's trying, especially if you're reinventing yourself and you're trying to move closer towards what your passion is and your goal, whatever it is you're trying to do, you will always have resistance. There will always be naysayers, especially if you're changing a career path later on in your life. You have a lot of people that tell you that's the wrong thing to do because they would be too scared to do it. And they're trying to put their fear or their insecurity on you. And as long as you're being smart about how you're going about it, as long as you're being realistic and not clouding your judgment with your own emotions, I think that you should go after your goals. Find a way to do it. Make it happen. Our lives are short and we're meant to live it the way we want to live it.
Yeah, it's such good advice. I wish you could just give that confidence and that courage to people. I do think that some of that, maybe for you, you had it younger, but for me, it didn't happen until I was a little bit older that I really started to feel that confidence of, this is my journey, not yours, not somebody else's. This is my life. And I have to do what is going to make me feel like I can feel good about myself and look myself in the mirror. But it is something that I think time has given me, not something that I've always had. I didn't always have that confidence and that courage. Yeah. I even today, Drew, I can see things on Twitter and I go, that's just wrong. I can't, it's just a horrible thing somebody's saying to somebody else. And then I think, should I weigh in? And if I weigh in, it's going to be a shit show because I'm going to get all sorts of, you know, negative things said and the bots. And then and you overthink what should be just a human reaction to defend and stand for what's right.
Yeah.
And
you know, Jonathan and me both, you know, in any given week, we get about 500,000 comments, questions or whatnot through social media from fans or not fans, a week. And large majority is positive or questions about the shows or questions about Linda and me or whatever it might be. But, you know, there are some of those negative comments that come up. And we found whether you respond to them in a positive way or whether you fight back in a negative way, whatever you do, they're just trying to get a rile out of you. People are just trying to get a response. And so no matter what you do, it's a bad response. Even blocking them is going to get a rise out of them. They'll just create new accounts. And so we find we just ignore a lot of that. And, you know, our fans sort of self-police it them, you know, themselves. They'll go in there and support. And I think that's really it. We see less and less of that because over the years we've just shown our path is a positive path. Like we're not here for negative energy. And with me saying that, I'm not saying I don't want to hear opposing opinions. I think anybody out there, you know, especially with the political race right now in the US and you're looking at how hateful some of the messaging can be back and forth, we have friends and we have fans that are Republican. We have friends that are Democrats. And the main thing for me is I want to be able to try and show people that I'm supporting people. I want to do what's best for people. I'm not trying to say red or blue. I just want to keep moving in a path that's supportive of people. And so that's the kind of post that I do. I encourage people to vote. No matter how you vote, just use your voice because everyone's voice is really important. And I will stand by equality and, you know, female empowerment and a lot of different initiatives that I still think need a lot of work in our society. And that's something I'll voice. And some people are against that or supporting LGBTQ community. That's your opinion, whatever you want. But I'm going to support that everyone deserves to be loved and live a life of love. So.
Yeah, I'm amen. And I stand right behind you on that, beside you on that, and in front of you on that. I think that's the point that sometimes we all have to take a place leading the charge. Sometimes we have to stand beside somebody who's, you know, fighting the battle and be there with them. And sometimes we have to stand behind them and push them forward and get all of us together doing the things that matter. I really want to underline what you said about social media and not responding to the haters. I do not engage with them. If, you know, I see them, I see the posts and I go, water off a duck's back because I don't know the person. They don't know me. They're generally a bot. And I don't really care what somebody else who doesn't know me has to say about me. And so, and blocking them is actually worse, I think. So I, you know, I'll mute them. I mute a lot of people because I just don't want to see it. Yeah. But blocking, they know. And then you're
exactly. You know, I was told at a young age, again, I can't remember who it was that brought this up as an analogy, but I actually quite liked it. And it was to do with whatever your passion is and whatever you're trying to move towards or your point of view. And, you know, people who differ from your point of view or people who aren't standing out from the crowd to speak up the way that you are, they have insecurities. They have their own insecurities, and it's a natural way that they'll try and bring you down. So also, when I was young, I don't really drink. I don't drink very much. Every now and then I'll have a, you know, a glass of wine or a Shirley Temple, whatever. That's my favorite drink. Anyway, but when I was younger,
that's your favorite drink.
It is. It's just, it makes me feel like I'm on a beach somewhere. But anyway, when I was younger though, I didn't drink until much later. So a lot of my friends were out partying and a lot of friends were out smoking. And I grew up in Vancouver as well. And so everybody smokes pot out there. I'm the only person on the planet, I think, that's never smoked pot. Anyway, so I found that constantly people were trying to peer pressure me because I didn't drink. Oh, come on, just have one. You got to have just one. Or what? I'm smoking, you smoke. I don't want to smoke by myself. Come on, just smoke. And all that these people were doing nonstop is they were jealous, subconsciously possibly, but they were jealous that I was doing something that they weren't comfortable doing yet on their own. And so they were trying to pull me down. Or when I was I would work out and I was really into training and working out and I was, you know, trying to be an athlete. And they kept trying to force the bad food on me and stuff, or don't go to the gym, let's go do this. And I realized that it's exactly the same in business. It's the exact same in any passion and goal that you try to go after. The moment you step out to try to do something different, other people, even people you love, will try to pull you down because of their insecurities. And just, there's a nice way to let them down and say, no, I'm doing this because this is something that's important to me. So I would appreciate you supporting me and not trying to pull me off the bandwagon.
Yeah, that's another piece of good advice for anybody who's listening to the podcast about, you know, reinventing yourself. You will always have what I call frenemies, people who are supposedly your friend, but they genuinely just can be your worst enemy because they're the ones who try and, you know, oh, you know, Drew, you shouldn't do that. I mean, I know you. You're not going to really, do you want to, why spend the time and effort? Let's, you know, you should do something else, I think, or you should think about something else. And they're the worst because they're the people you trust the most and that you listen to the most and that you believe know you the best. And so when they tell you not to do something, you kind of go, oh, rats, you know, like maybe they're right. And you start to get your own insecurities. And it's so important that you just say no.
Yeah. Well, that's why I want to, you know, huge thank you to my parents and my brothers and obviously my wife, Linda, as well. Having the right people around you with that right energy that are feeding you the right support, or they're helping, you know, bounce creative ideas or direction that you want to go, bouncing ideas off each other. That's the community that I've always supported, having around me.
Yeah, some of my dearest friends have never seen Dragon's Den, never seen me speak, haven't read my books, don't know anything about me other than they've been my friends for a long time. And I love them the best because there's no gain. They don't, you know, they don't care. They just want to be with me because of, you know, who I am. Mm-hmm. There's fewer and fewer of them because they're, you know, they start to understand what's going on with the show, but that's all right. I'm interested in how humans think and share and work together. And you've made me think a lot. If you had something to say I feel like I could talk to you for a long time. I haven't kind of gone through any of the things that I wanted to talk to you about because your story is so fascinating. But, you know, from 7 years old and running a business to being clowns to doing real estate to get into acting to running the largest production company for HGTV and producing more shows than anyone else for the networks that you work with to having, you know, millions and millions of viewers, all the things that you've done with your life. Is there a next stage of reinvention for you? Is there something next for you that you really want to do, Drew, that you feel like you need to accomplish?
Yeah. I mean, I'm like you. There are a million amazing things out there, and I just love experiencing life. I love to always learn and grow. the day I stop growing is the day I'm dead. I mean, the day I stop learning is the day I'm dead. And
yeah.
I love having, it's like that childlike wonder we were talking about and that creativity that children have. I've never lost it because I had the right support group around me to help continue to foster that. And so one thing that is really a passion right now, you know, Linda and I have our podcast At Home, but our podcast is just one portion of this journey that we're really excited about. And, you know, we've always dreamed of having a destination somewhere where we could have family, friends, and strangers come and stay with us, like a little boutique hotel, farm to table, a little farm, and somewhere that we can live the most sustainable life, somewhere that we can grow our own food. And it's just, we like the idea of something that is this, it's positive for us, our family, and the environment. And so that's a big passion project for us right now, and we're working towards that. And so, you know, a part of our podcast is speaking to the people who, you know, share some of those values, and also learning other aspects of how we want to raise our children, aspects of Linda and my relationship, how we can improve our communication, our relationship. So that's really it. Like, I'm really excited to go down this path towards where we are there. And, you know, I think, you know, you and I are talking about, there's a lot going on, especially in the U.S. right now with the vote coming up very soon. And there's a lot of people on far different sides of the fence. And there's a lot of hate and whatnot. And I always think back to Jane Goodall. She's come across a lot of hate over the years, and she's had a lot of fights that she's had to be a part of. And the way she's always said that she approaches life is, from what I've heard from her saying, is that, she never attacks the other side. She never goes in. When people sort of have a certain message or agenda and they go after the other side with that, it always just puts up a wall on the other side. Well, we don't want to build walls. We want to build bridges. And so the idea of trying to open a door or open a bridge of communication with somebody that has an opposing view, it's probably a better way for you to learn from them as to why they're so strong about their opinion. And hopefully both of you will learn and grow that way. And so I think that's, for Linda and me, that's something that we're really focused on, is trying to better understand those opposing sides, to try and find a way to open up their minds to a more positive society for all of us.
Yeah, well, I know you will accomplish it, because I know that you're driven, and I know you're purpose driven. And I'll share one final thought with you. Through the pandemic, I went back and basically started to think a lot. I have a place of about 30 acres of land in Northern Ontario. And I've been thinking about, you know, sustainability, and it's an organic piece of land. There's been no chemicals on there. I've been thinking a lot about, you know, what can I make and produce in this land? And I started canning again, and, you know, I've canned everything this summer. I've really gotten back to nature and sustainability, and how we feed ourselves and how we can feed others. And what you talked about in terms of a farm where you can invite people into a conversation, a genuine mm-hmm. conversation, where you can disagree respectfully, where you can have tension between each other, but it's a healthy tension, where you can enjoy good, healthy food and nourish your soul and your body at the same time. This is, to me, this has really become a defining moment in time to think about what matters in life. And I think what you're wanting to do in the future is at the core of what matters in life. Mm-hmm. So I really hope you do it.
Well, I mean, hey, at the end of the day, family is everything, and also our planet is a big part of it. So if we don't have a planet, or a healthy planet, because of how we're chipping away at it, then we're going to be dead out of water. So there's something we all have to do. I'm telling you, with your farm, I have so much up here just from what we've learned over the past years. If you want to talk regenerative farming, I can give you some great ideas for your place.
Oh, I do, Drew. I will take you up on that, because I've got bees now. I have honey that I did this year. It's just been, honestly, I feel like I could probably, you know, put on a pair of jeans every day and live on that land and do nothing but think about how I can turn that land into something incredible to help nurture and help others. So maybe our dream for the next reinvention is very similar, and we can share ideas on it.
We'll all live on a farm together.
You can come build me a barn. Could you do that?
There we go. It'll be the most stylish barn you've ever seen. Your horses are going to be happy.
I don't need horses. I just need a barn.
There you go.
Yeah. The horses sound like too much work, but maybe. Well, Drew, thank you so much for spending the time with me. I wish we had more time, but I know I promised you I would stay to my time here, and I appreciate. Is there anything you want to say? Anything final you want to say? I'll give you the last word.
I mean, this has been a lot of fun. I just love being a part of trying to inspire people the way that you do too. So, I mean, I think there's so much. Don't look at life for anybody who's looking at reinventing themselves. I mean, I don't like to think of life as a competition. Like people say, are we in competition with the other hosts on HGTV? No, there's more than enough room for all of us. There's more than enough room for everyone to be successful out there. If you are passionate about something, move towards it. Find people with similar passion that can help push you in the right direction or be along with you for that journey. But yeah, thanks for having me on. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks for inspiring me. You've given me lots of things, but you're a really great human. So I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. Thank you.
The next time you think you don't have the time or ability to reach your goals, remember Drew's story. From an early age, he had found his core purpose, but knew that he couldn't afford to not work and only pursue acting. Working within the context of this reality, both he and his brother began to identify opportunities that would provide expertise and income to finance their dreams. I know what you're thinking. This is usually how people spread themselves too thin, but that's not true. As Drew demonstrates, when you've planned it out correctly and have the support needed, you will succeed. And those frenemies that are trying to take you off course with bad advice in the form of a reality check, keep them at a distance. Stay safe and stay human. Thanks for listening, everybody.
This podcast is made possible by the great folks at Venture Communications. Thanks to our engineers, writers, producers, and all the folks who work really hard to bring you these great stories of reinventions each and every week.